I feel like there's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy there, because like a lot of promoters know that they, okay, well, I have like a bit of a racist audience, so I better not book Radu.
Hello, welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers, or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. If you notice the recent episode, I've moved. I'm in a new studio. That's why in the last episode, my sound was a little bit sketchy. I think I'm getting the hang of it. This is my third returning guest. The guest has appeared in episode 6 and 7 in 2022, season 1. Okay. First, I'm going to say his name. Let's welcome back Radu Isaac.
Thank you, Quan Wen. Appreciate it. So yeah, I didn't know. I know I was coming back. I didn't know I was the third one. Who were the other two?
Oh, the first one was Samsi from Singapore.
Samsi, okay.
The other is Sergi.
Sergio, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And funny enough, last time when I listened back to the last recording, you did Sergio's podcast, but then Sergio removed them, so those episodes cannot be found anymore.
I don't think it was a good episode. I don't remember it, but I don't think.
I appreciate your honesty. Okay.
But then if he removed them, I don't think he removed them because he wants to like repackage them and sell them to Netflix.
No, he say that podcast is too much work. He simply doesn't have time for this. I've asked him about it.
That's why I'm really grateful that you're having me on, because I know the amount of work. Like, I have no idea how many listeners you have, but I know exactly the amount of work it takes to put on the podcast, and I appreciate
that. I'm a listener. No, this is not a massive podcast, but I would say it's a bit brutal, the listener number between episodes. Like,
okay.
Not really. Either way, your episode was released on the 16th of August, 2022, and we recorded in June, 2022.
Okay, yeah.
Listening back, in hindsight, I would have done it differently, but it did cover a lot of interesting points. I was analyzing every bit of your accent, literally, from how Romanian you sounded, from your personal way of speaking, from your cadence, from your tone, from your pitch, and then I think now the focus is slightly different. I'm not going to repeat too much what I've already done, even though it was an early edit, even though I said I would have added differently. Right now, I still encourage people to go back to those two episodes, because Radu mentions a very interesting point. For example, you were suffering from the racism from a Polish accent, and you say that I can imagine that coming from a British comedian, but to receive that from a fellow East European comedian, come on.
Yeah, I think I still am, but not from like necessarily comedians, but like from everybody in the UK. It's becoming like so much more evident every time that it happens.
Basically, the attitude is like, you can also relate to being on the receiving end of British racism. So why do you have to turn around and replicate that? Why do you have to regard us as inferior just to make yourself feel better? Because you are just perpetrating and replicating the same behavior from your abusers, so to speak, right?
But in a
jokey tone, not in a very accusatory victim tone. The other good point is that there's only so much English you can speak in one day. Your muscles just can't put up with speaking too much English in a day. And you have an index. Like, the further away you're from London, say the more rural area you go, you have to allow more time in your comedy set to explain your accent so people can get used to you. Otherwise, they'll be distracted. That was all very interesting point.
In the meantime, what happened, I just kind of stopped doing too many gigs outside of London.
That's one of the questions I have today. When we last met, you were going out of London to do gigs. You are doing the progression. You want to be known by all the major clubs in this country. You want to move up the ladder in a circuit.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned you don't go out of London much. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, the world changed ever since I started. I do regret doing a lot of tryouts in like different cities. Now, if they offered me a paid gig, I still wouldn't go. The fees kind of stayed the same, but everything got more expensive. It just doesn't make sense financially to take a train in the UK to do a gig.
Is that the only reason?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly the only reason.
So it's not like the audience elsewhere put you off with anything.
Oh, no. And I'm not upset with anybody, but also I feel like there's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy there, because like a lot of promoters know that they, okay, well, I have like a bit of a racist audience, so I better not book Radu. So then they don't book me, and then I get those bookings like more rarely, and because I don't get them often, I'm not experienced in dealing with a racist audience.
Right.
I don't think it's hard to have a career in like a racist area of the UK as a Romanian person. You just need a bit of experience to know, you know, comedy is a lot about anticipating people's thoughts. So I need to have done that audience to be able to kill that audience.
Now I'm just going to give the listeners a little bit of context. I do make fun of the UK. You kind of make fun of yourself, but you don't only. So I'm going to challenge your notion. You're saying that it's not easy or possible for immigrant to perform in a racist area. You can, but you only treat yourself as a circus monkey. And that's not the kind of comedy you personally do or you fancy doing.
I think that's the easy way to treat yourself as, I could dress like a Romanian and do all the stereotypes to them.
East European immigrant and go into a racist area. Okay, so there are type of jokes you conform to the stereotype, but you still require the audience to have like the middle class progressive moral guilt. So you would say something like, oh, you think immigrants are nice, but I hate immigrants. Oh, you think immigrants are nice, but I do come here to steal your jobs, right? These are the jokes you can do.
Yeah.
Or you can just paint yourself as the backward and almost like barbarian kind of immigrant just to please them. But I personally don't like that kind of comedy.
Oh, yeah. I don't like it either. I wouldn't do it. But what I'm saying is I have done like extremely well at like an extremely racist audience. But it's just like my set needs some tweaks here and there. And if it's not what I usually do, sometimes I don't get all the tweaks right.
Okay.
So I still do the exact same jokes. I'm actually very proud that I can make the jokes work to like any audience.
Yeah.
But it does require a bit more effort on my behalf.
Let's dwell on this a little bit further. So you're saying those audience, they are not instinctively warming up to an immigrant comedian.
Yeah.
You found a way that you could still do it, but you think this, you don't feel like it. Is it because it's still too much risk or the level of reward compared to the amount of work you need to put into is not worth it?
It's to do with like literally every joke, because most of my gigs, let's say like 95% of my gigs are like at a liberal audience. Every joke, I have to do it at a liberal audience. So, okay, I know how to do it here. And then I need to do it at like a racist audience. And then I learn how to do it there. But then if, let's not say racist, but you know, like not as sympathetic of an audience. Because let's say I'll get like 3 gigs a year in like a racist area. And then in that time, I keep writing jokes. I always have like 6 minutes of my set that's never been tested to like a racist crowd. So I don't really know how to avoid the pitfalls.
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those things. I can do it, but I don't have enough gigs to actually work on the material. It's not like a 50-50 audience.
Right.
I'm just very skewered to like a 95% audience of liberals.
I'm going to give the listener an example. I don't know if you remember, it's either 2022 or 23. We were both on Shaggers.
Okay.
So in Three Sisters during Edinburgh Fringe Festival,
okay.
And I think you were on before me, you went out and literally you just say to the crowd, you English people are so like ugly. So you just say it that way.
Okay.
But whereas a clip you share on social media, the notion was still, you basically, the joke is you're accusing English people of uglier than East European. But what you say is that in Eastern Europe, we have ugly buildings, but beautiful people.
Yeah.
Whereas in the UK, you have beautiful buildings and you deliberately pause, a long pause, even though the idea is the same. Basically, you as an immigrant accusing English people ugly looking, the way you deliver it is quite different.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you initially slightly mislead them. And when people realize that you're accusing them of being ugly, it's kind of late to feel offended outright. But when you just say, you know, you guys are ugly, it has to be very liberal people who are happy
like
to be criticized by foreigner can take it. People who are not that kind of audience will instinctively become defensive.
Yeah.
And I remember the Shagger gig, it didn't go down quite well. Half of the audience turned off.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. I'm not going to talk about like relationships and stuff. I don't feel like I'm seen enough as a person in the UK to be able to open up about relationships. I feel like I'm too much of a caricature and people still imagine the caricature in a relationship with somebody.
So
I don't talk about relationships anymore. The Shaggers is the show that's just about...
Yes.
But I'll give you like another example. So when I was doing all the tryouts throughout the UK and my number of gigs were more balanced between like a liberal audience and a not one, if I would go to like a more right-wing audience, I would ask the MC to tell the crowd that I'm Romanian. If it's like a liberal show, I would tell the crowd that I'm Romanian. And then I would do the exact same jokes in the beginning of the show. But because in the racist crowd, the audience had like an extra 10 seconds to get comfortable. So, okay, now the Romanian guy is going to come and talk to us. Then I was able to do the joke.
So you've done this the control environment experiment, and literally that one change.
That one change, yes, changed the set completely.
Wow. You mentioned that in your article, interview with Guardian in 2018, and I found it fascinating. You say that if the crowd is not liberal enough, I will let the MC being the bearer of bad news.
Yeah, that's basically what it is, yeah. Well, you should tell them the bad news, or I'm going to tell them the good news if it's a liberal crowd. It's still not fair. Like, I also know that I get a bit more love from a liberal crowd than, like, a, let's say, like a 40-year-old white straight dude would get here.
It's fascinating, isn't
and
it?
And from, like, an English dude would get.
But you did get to the final of English Comedian of the Year. Let's not forget about that. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, at the end of the day, it's just jokes. And if people laugh, it's undeniable. So they kind of go, okay, well,
but
we don't like it, but
does
you
it
go.
Does change also reflect that you kind of change where you see your ultimate goal or end game is right now? Let me explain. So when you first came to the UK, you want to be a bigger comedian, better known. So you probably were thinking either you can get on British TV or you can tour the UK. That was the initial goal. You probably envisaged to the extent. But these more or less that. In 2025, in March 2025, you're probably thinking you want to have a much bigger social media profile, which the follow come from the whole world, basically.
Yeah.
And you've also discovered your touring possibility is just not confined to the British Isles.
Yeah, yeah.
You've done touring in continental Europe.
Yeah.
You could possibly even plan to go to Australia, Canada, America in the future. So how much the British mid-tier rural towns like you may be still important, but not as important as it used to be.
Exactly. I know, like,
that's my guess. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly correct. Yeah. And I know, like, most of the agencies and most of the power of the industry is still like British people, and they look at how well you do to like a racist audience. I think they do because they want to be able to sell it to your audience. But I feel like there's a bigger thing that's happening right now with like a global comedians. That's why I kind of wanted to come on your podcast, and I wanted to be here more and more because I really think international comedy is like the next big thing.
Yeah. So this is where we go into the second section of a discussion today. I've mentioned in other episodes before, my listeners' pie chart, yeah, the British audience has reduced from 60% to 30% or so. And it doesn't reflect, it's actually not fewer British people listening. It's just a lot more people from outside the UK listening to this podcast.
Like, so many people are following stand-up and are just kind of discovering it now. Like, they learned English probably like in the last 10 years, and now they're discovering stand-up and they're getting deeper and deeper into it.
Yeah, and this is where I'm saying, when we as immigrant coming to the UK, we arrived here, we were thinking about how to bring the gap between us and the British audience closer.
Yeah.
And then, at least in my personal case, I noticed that, well, actually, the urban population in the UK is slightly different from the smaller towns. Sometimes there's even a difference between city center and a suburb, right?
Yeah.
Then you also notice in some central London gig, I'm not just performing to British people. There's a very good percentage of international people, as evidenced by the gig you run, the immigrant comedy. Then you discover the possibility that actually I can go outside of UK. It is possible without professional industry help to self-organize shows or even a tour in different countries who don't necessarily speak English as the first language.
Yeah, when I first moved to the UK, I honestly thought I'm gonna do comedy to like a English-speaking first language, English-speaking population of the world. So, you know, America, Australia, England, and so on. But then after I came here, I started meeting just people from Europe that kind of had the same kind of idea. I want to do it in English. So I met like... At gigs in London, or like hearing about them, or like somebody. There were like these English-speaking gigs around Europe, but they would mostly be to like English expats.
Mm-hmm.
But around them, you'd get like a local that would go to like try like a 5 minutes in English. So I kept meeting... Like around 2015, I met like Ari Mati. There's a guy from Poland, Peter.
Ari Mati is from Estonia. Right?
Ari Mati is from Estonia, yeah. So he was the same. He was doing it very big in Estonia, but also
I was trying to invite him on because I met him at your gig. Like, he never replied to me on Instagram. I'm like, okay, whatever.
I think he might be very big now, but also like...
Yeah, because he's quite big in the USA right now. So.
I'll tell you if I hear what he's coming back with. Yeah, I don't know if he'd reply to my messages now.
Thank you for making me feel better.
Yeah, I don't message my parents all the time. I don't message anybody all the time. No, anybody that messages me all the time, they're not my friend.
Let's come back to this.
They don't know who I am.
Relationship between us as a performer and how we map out our audience, right? Because initially we're thinking, how do I get the British people to understand? How do I make sure my jokes or my sense of humor is aligned with the British audience sense of humor, right? And you think maybe one day, if I'm lucky enough, I may have to get the Americans or Canadians, Australians to be on board. But now you're thinking, actually, it's a much bigger and more diverse crowd or demographic or background you're thinking.
I would say it this way. I think out of all the English speakers of the world, most of them aren't first language English speakers.
Yes.
So we have a bigger power as like the potential audience. For second...
non-native English.
Non-native
speaker.
English, thank you. We needed an English speaker here. But yeah, for the potential audience for non-native English speakers is way bigger than for English speakers. It's just been so far because the BBC transmitted all over the world and all the American shows went all over the world that all the American and England comedians became like world famous.
I once came across something very quickly. I didn't screenshot it. I believe it was Edinburgh Fringe Festival, but I don't have the evidence. So they basically say that the majority of nominees here are very diverse and reflect the international nature of the festival. Okay. Our nominees come from UK, USA, Canada, Australia. I'm like, did you not realize how funny it looks? Every single country was an ex-colony of the UK. They're all English speaking. And for you, that's diverse enough in this globalized age. That's ridiculous. And I really should have screenshot that. Do you feel the different recognition of the potential audience change the way you design or write your jokes? So I'll give you an example.
Okay.
When I used to observe things around me, want to turn them into joke, instinctively, I may quote a British TV program.
Okay.
And you heard those jokes from British comedians before. They could talk about naked attraction, where people try to select the potential date out of how their naked body looks like. Now, when it comes to this kind of gag or theme, I would avoid them because the benefit of those jokes are a bit low.
I agree.
TV viewership is going down. Like, not even all British people watch them. Yeah. At the same time, I can't do this joke when I face non-British people. So,
yeah, but for me, I'm not that good at planning ahead. But what I do is if I have a lot of gigs, I try to have like gigs in diverse places. And that's how I know I stop myself from going to the rabbit hole of making jokes that are only working for like one section of the globe. So if I gig in London for a year without leaving, after a year, I almost can't gig anywhere else because like all of my set is just peppered with little references that nobody else would get.
Basically you push yourself to gig in more places to make sure. Okay, so like, you're not like me. You don't think about it all the time. But what you need to do to ensure your joke can be as universal as possible is to push yourself and you don't always stay at the same place.
Yeah. Try and gig like different. Even like within London, you know, there's like very different audiences. Even within central London, I would say some clubs are way more liberal than others. And I think Angel, Top Secret, they're the most international. And then you have like some clubs that it's like it's the middle of London and you go inside and it's like 98% British people and one Italian person.
Yeah.
Very excited that he's Italian.
I look up what you have done since our recording last time. Okay. Radu has done quite a few podcasts and I have to say, listening to some of them was a little bit difficult experience for me.
Okay.
Two podcasts display very annoying in my personal taste. I know they are audience for that. I think it's disguised as a jokey attitude, but they display the English superiority over East European immigrant. I didn't like it. One was joking about, just how beautiful East European women are. If you remember which podcast that is, you don't have to name it.
I'm going to ask you afterwards. Yeah.
And one of them was, you were joking about maybe you should consider wearing socks with sandals, which is not a very pleasant sort of fashion look. But you say, so many people hate it, so I just want to do it, just to annoy you guys. So you were just being funny on this idea.
Yeah.
And then one of their hosts went, because your Romanian gene is kicking in. So you cannot resist the urge. I don't know what you feel on site, but I just thought, this is not on. You disguise as a jokey tone, but it's a very...
But honestly, it happens to like, if I go to like what you would call an extreme right-wing podcast, if I go to like an extreme left-wing podcast, it still happens. I feel like people are so not used to like speaking to like an Eastern European that they don't really know. Like it happened to me at Angel like 2 weeks ago. I was saying something. I don't know. I was making like a joke.
By a fellow comedian?
Yeah. Like in the green room. And I know he's like the nicest dude ever. And he was extremely nice about it. Like it bothered me. And then he asked me if it bothered me, which I really appreciated. You know, I was saying something and he kind of went, well, I guess that's dark Eastern European. And I felt, no, that's just...
racist.
That's just racist. And that it's you also always like, bring like the conversation.
And this is not like original racist. Like an entry level, very elementary school, rudimentary level of racism.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing particularly original about it. Are you saying that because they don't know much and they are kind of socially awkward?
I think so.
They think they're using a stereotype as an icebreaker and they're saying that surely you're a comedian, you can take the joke.
Yeah.
Whereas you think that, but your joke has to be more specific about me or something instead of just a blanket attack on...
Yeah, make me feel like we haven't spoken in like 6 months. Come on, just it can't be the first thing that you tell me is something to do with me being Romanian.
This touring in continental Europe.
Okay.
Who started the idea? Was it because Victor invited you or did you suggest it?
So Victor started touring a lot after? No, he during the pandemic.
Victor is episode one of the second season and he started this almost like a mini revolution himself.
Oh, yeah. He changed his life. It's fantastic to see the transformation he went through. For me, I was doing gigs around Europe. So I was saying after I moved here, I learned that English speaking comedy is starting to be like a little thing. There's like a lady in Prague, Kristina Haklova, I think.
Oh, yes.
She was running a few gigs in Prague, so I went there a few times. And then I found out about the gig in Krakow. So before the pandemic, I was already kind of doing those gigs. And now I'm half headlining bigger shows in Europe and also trying to learn. Because basically touring, you're self-producing your own
before
shows.
Before the pandemic...
That's what touring is, right?
Yeah. So when did you move from just doing a spot at a local gig to doing your own show in a foreign city?
I think like even before the pandemic, I might have tried one or two.
Oh, you did?
There's another guy, Dragos Comedy. He's Romanian as well. So he started before the pandemic. And then there's a guy, Daniel Spalding.
Yeah.
He used to put on shows.
I knew him around Europe. I knew him from Berlin.
But he the idea of touring was there. It had been done.
Okay. I remember what I wanted to say. So Rotu released his special. It's very good special. Keep Coughing on YouTube. It's free to watch. Last night I checked, it was about 67,000 viewer. And the viewer number should really be higher. One fun fact, this special was filmed in Vienna.
Yeah.
And you talk about planning to do the special recording in London, but why did you decide to do it in Vienna?
So I did it in London. Also, I'm not one of those people that likes to watch themselves. So I did it in London and I had this feeling that I didn't really fully like it. And I was with Victor on the road for like 3 weeks. And then I was complaining to him he was asking me how the special was and I just didn't know. Because I was telling you before, I don't know about song quality. I just can't be bothered too much with this stuff. And we had a couple of great gigs on the road. And Victor was saying, well, we have like two back-to-back in Vienna. Why don't we just film it there again? And pretend
so
like
you had taped one in London.
I had taped one in
but
London.
But you were
yeah.
on the fence about whether to release it because you were not 100% happy with it.
Yeah. Like right now, I'm the opposite. I'm on the fence about having released the one in Vienna. I feel like maybe the one in London was better. No, it's like it's not the science. So you just kind of go by feeling.
I think on stage you did really well for the one in Vienna, but the sound quality, there were a few places where the bit sort of sketchy, but it's horrible. And I kept thinking, is it because the audience in Vienna are more likely to be even more international? So they are more likely to be on board with you or...
No, it just kind of happened. And now I kind of have the opposite. Now I kind of want to film another special. Even then I had like a 6-minute bit that would only work in the UK. So I felt like, okay, well, I can't do that on the special. Like in the London recording, that was on the special. In the Vienna one, it wasn't.
How many people attended the London special recording?
I did like two. And I think in total, I don't know, 160.
So that's not because the Viennese gigs, the tickets sold better.
Oh, no.
You just make like an arbitrary decision.
Kind of a bit, yeah.
You kind of say, okay, let's do it last minute. And you feel like you've troubled those people. So it's kind of
I think the excitement of it, yeah. I think the excitement of it was the London one. I planned it for like 6 months in advance. And then I did it. And then somebody gave me a file.
A little bit more adrenaline pushed it over the edge.
I think that was the reason, basically.
Push this special aside. In general, after you went down the continental European city to gig and you compare those shows to those you still do here.
Yeah. But the idea is like at the end of the day, I need to start doing like hour shows or like 40 minutes plus. In the UK, most of the sets are like 20 minutes. Club comedy, it tends to become like very superficial here in the UK. Like,
ooh, did you just suck you?
I know, but you know what I mean. Like it's yes. It's 20 minutes. You have to do.
I know, but I'm too afraid to say it. And you just let it out.
Oh, well, I think the promoters even kind of go, look, this isn't Edinburgh. Just do your dick jokes and leave me alone. They kind of, come on, we need to enter.
Tone it down.
We need to entertain these stag dudes.
Yes.
It's not all the club.
So they are drunk to this point. They have no spare capacity to think anything more profound. Just keep it light.
Keep it light. And I don't like keeping it light.
Because you like to make people think.
I don't think I like to make... I think it's more of a shortcut to me, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have the thought and it's easier to just express the thought rather than condense it into like a joke. If that makes any sense.
Yes, because I was thinking about...
Like, I'd love to do what Mark Simmons does. I'd love to have that skill of just...
Are you talking about the crowd interaction skill or the one-liner writing skill?
The one-liner. I feel like I would like performing them more.
Too technical on the comedian.
Okay, sorry about that.
You don't have to be sorry. It is my job to pull you back.
Yeah.
So I was curious about what's the difference performing to different audiences. Basically, performing to different audiences. But even when you were in continental Europe, there was a difference, right? So for example, is it... Unless every city you go, it's always the same mix, level of mixes?
It's kind of the same level of mixes, and I like it because it's the international audience I was talking about earlier, like the non-native English speakers. If I go to Belgium, if I put on my own show, it's going to be something like 2 or 4% of the audience are Belgian people, and the rest of the audience is just people from other countries working in Belgium that want to enjoy something in English.
They can come from everywhere.
Yeah.
So
in that audience, I'm just like everybody else. Like in the UK, I'm the odd one out. But in that audience, like I really feel like I'm in my hometown somehow. Like I'm more in my hometown in Brussels than I am in London or in Bucharest where I was born.
You might have a slight preference over those gigs in the big continental European city because when everyone is the odd one out, no one is the odd one out.
Yeah.
But here in London, your accent and the fact that you're Romanian is still the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
In the interview with Guardian, this is what you quoted. Radu, his dream is to play a gig without mentioning he's foreign. It's very difficult to do a set without referring to being Romanian, but I'm building up to it. But little did you know at that time you would achieve it just by moving the gigs outside the United Kingdom.
So yeah, the interview from The Guardian, by the way, it's from like 9 years ago and I still haven't achieved that.
No, it's 7 years ago.
7 years, but I still haven't achieved that. I'm not able to do a gig in the UK without mentioning where I'm from. And I can do that in continental Europe. I can also, like, when I speak Romanian, I have, like, a thick Romanian accent. And in Romania, it took me something like maybe, like, 2.5 years or, like, 3 years to be able to do a gig without mentioning where I'm from.
You know, even without looking or listening back to the old episode, for whatever reason, I still remember you're from Vaslui.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
I like that.
I remember you telling me you always have a funny accent in whatever language you speak, even Romanian. Because in Romania, you don't speak the capital's accent.
Yeah.
But I would say gigging in London, I'm happy with the compromise. I mean, I have to do the admin. I have to cover that I'm Taiwanese a little bit. But pretty soon, I can do whatever I want to do. I mean, outside London, it's a bit more difficult.
Okay.
Would you... Because you have a whole set, for example. I really like your joke about... Now, the food does not even require you to chew anymore. And what is wrong with the food being chewy? That thing has nothing to do with you being a Romanian. And the audience also loved it. Possibly because we were at immigrant comedy, the audience were international anyway.
Yeah.
But that is an example. In London, it's perfectly possible for you to open. So if you're wondering about this accent, I'm from Romania. And you can do a joke or maybe not do a joke and you start talking about chewy food. And I think it's doable in London.
I think it definitely is. And I'm honestly very comfortable in London. But if I'm going to tour, can't tour London. Maybe you can. And then I would have to tour the UK. And then if I tour the UK, then I hit the wall again.
But let's say if you go to Brussels and Vienna, do you not have to say anything about your accent at all?
No. I still do. But it's my choice if I do it or not. It's not necessarily it's just a symbol if I do it or not. It's just what I feel like I'm able to talk about without having to address the elephant in the room. So I know how big the elephant in the room is. I have a sense of it from the thousands of gigs I did. It's a very subtle thing otherwise.
Your monthly, now it's bi-weekly show. Immigrant comedy would have enlarged that fan base?
I think that helped a bit. I'm quite proud of that show, the fact that it exists and so on. It's bi-monthly, but I would say maybe I do it around 10 times a year and we have like 22 dates.
So we talked about this last time briefly towards the end of last recording. You organized the East European Comedy Festival in 2018. Yeah. It's so much work, and also the pandemic decimated the immigrant performers pool here.
Yeah, the Eastern European performer pool.
So you don't
do
the festival anymore, and you turn it into a show, and then you change it from East European to immigrant comedy. Anyone who's an immigrant is welcome to perform.
Kind of, yeah. I'm kind of uncomfortable turning people away. Like if somebody from Australia asked me, I'm kind of uncomfortable turning them away, but I still do because I feel like there's something special about let's get people from like more poor and marginalized and people that are like outsiders. Yeah. I feel like, you know, if you move from Australia to the UK, it's a big move, but it feels like changing cities.
Do you know the amount of people from America and Canada ask that, like, oh, when is my turn to be on this podcast? I'm like, your accent fundamentally negate the reason I want to have this podcast. But that's not...
There's a whole area of the world where you speak English and that's not an accent.
I want to ask you about this gig specifically. Over these years, has the pool of immigrant comedian grown?
Even that, yeah, I kind of notice it, and it's more and more, and it's also almost like it's starting to get hard to keep track of everybody that's from a different country and doing it. And also, I try to kind of know all the performers, and I want them to be from a different country and moved here as adults. But it's like, it's an uncomfortable question to ask somebody that
you've only first met. Someone who has grown up from their worldview in a different cultural background.
Exactly,
and then
that.
You pick that sort of cultural clash. Because what we face quite often, you don't want to discriminate because their point of view is also valid, but you are not looking for the growing up here, second generation, do I belong here or not? You want like a fresh off the boat-ish immigrant
perspective. Because, you know, there's also like a lot of immigrants living in the UK that if they go to a comedy show, they're not going to understand anything. Yeah. It's all references that go over their head.
One of the appeal of the show, because they feel like if they go to a typical comedy show in the UK, a lot of references are lost to them.
Yeah.
But when they come to an immigrant comedy show, they are the audience.
Exactly that. And then, like, you also get locals, you know, people who born here and everything.
Yeah.
And I like that they get to actually hear our side of the story, more or less. There's no one side of the story. But, you know, hear a different perspective.
Okay, so how do you keep yourself informed? You say it's difficult to follow who's new. Do you just, like, ask around people?
Yeah, kind of ask around, basically.
Yeah,
and I know, like, if you're newer, I know you're doing all the open mics, so you're going to meet other newer people. So yeah. I'm trying to ask around.
And you will mix around the region, nationality, so you wouldn't have, like, too many acts trying to do the same stuff.
Ideally, so we have, like, 5 or 6 performers, or, like, let's say 6 or 7 performers, and ideally I cover all the continents, I cover all the colors, I cover all the genders. And then, like, a mix of style as well, because you can't really want to have the same style.
When an immigrant comedian asks you for a spot, and you're like, you're kind of not good, what do you do in this scenario?
Oh, no, I just don't reply. I'm not gonna. You know, it's a losing conversation. I can't explain why I don't think it's. If I get friendly with the dude, then eventually I'm gonna tell them. If I feel like, oh, we're friends, I can trust you with hearing this information. That's, but I feel like most new comedians are so sort of sensitive that I'm not gonna say anything.
That's
negative.
One thing I don't miss about running a gig. It's just like how to turn down people. You don't think, because you have to maintain the quality of the show. Okay, I'm looking at my phone for a reason, because I want to.
I feel like, okay.
Something. This is from your performance at E Yumori at the Romanian TV show, bit like a Britain's Got Talent.
Oh, yeah, you were on that show as well, yeah.
Oh, God, I didn't like it because one judge, the rapper, complained about me joking about politics. The other judges were all high praise. He gave me a no.
You know, there's the format of the three judges and one of them has to be an asshole.
Yeah, yeah, but I was
I know.
For a rapper to complain about my political joke, do you see the irony? Like, rappers, a rapper.
He's a guy that's not aging well.
So why do I come to that? Because I remember in the first recording, we talk about how much, I say that how much your accent and your voice make your show funnier. And you say that you take it, but you don't want it to be the main reason people find you funny, right?
Yeah.
I just want to back myself up because this is one of the comments left by a random YouTube user in Romania. And he says this.
Doamne Ecaterin Cosrău, omul ăsta, accentul, vocea și expresia feței îl ajută mult.
Yeah, a lot of the comments on that video are about my voice. It's a lot of my voice, yeah. But yeah, no, I have an accent.
No, but the comments say, oh my God, he's so mean. But then his accent and his voices and his facial expression help a lot. And that's what that user said. And more than one user mentioned your accent and your voices.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I made a valid point last time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's totally a valid point. But also, I think because I like getting a laugh, so my voice, I have a different voice when I like different voices for whatever I do. I don't think I'm...
That's true. What I notice is that you have a very similar vibe, whether you speak English or Romanian. You have a more of a difference when you perform for comedy or when you sit down and do a podcast.
But I was going to say, yeah, like, for example, when I get angry, I have a completely different voice. It's not, you know, I have a good angry voice. I feel like I could play an angry person.
Define a good angry voice, because mostly you are sort of...
I can yell at somebody and be frightening, if that makes sense. Like, no, I can't fight or anything like that. But I have a good angry voice.
Mentioned last time that you're not happy about a certain aspect of the world, but you only go as far as making a joke about it. There's going to be no involvement in any activism. You're just gonna, and that's going to embody in your special that's now on YouTube, Keep Coughing, which is based on your 2022 show Pandemic at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I like the idea of you having a show to close that era. I think we are now at a good time to still remember what happened during the pandemic, but there's enough distance not to feel too troubled by it.
A big regret I have with that special is that I didn't really move a bit faster, and I feel like it would have been more successful if I put it online maybe like even 6 months earlier.
I agree, but better late than never.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still there, and that the whole point is I also have like another 4 specials in my career that I never put out, if that makes sense. Like I had like a very worked out hour that just kind of fizzled away with time, and
I
never felt
after the pandemic. I originally had an idea to do a show and just name the show, because my name is Quan Wen. Yeah. I would have named the show Quan Wen Tinged to just play around. It's a wordplay of, I think I lost the momentum right now.
2021, that would have been the moment to do it.
Yeah, 2021, I wouldn't even dare to leave my own household. So you joke about the vaccine and you claim to be anti-vaccine, but you make a really funny joke that, yeah, but I'm a vax anti-vaxxer. Like,
yeah, so, I wanted to, yeah.
But is there, I don't know, it's not a comedian's job or responsibility, but was there any inner debate when you were thinking whether you to include this joke or not in the show?
No, because I feel like, I do think the vaccine rollout was a big, was a mistake. I'm not like anti, and it's not, you know, this conspiracy, and then there's actually mean people in charge of the world.
Yeah.
So it's, obviously I don't want to fall in the, you know, I do a joke about Jeffrey Epstein right now.
Mm-hmm.
And about, I think billionaires are still probably having sex with 16-year-olds.
Yeah, obviously.
It hasn't changed. But the idea of pedophile ring with billionaires and stuff, that's also like a big conspiracy theory. But also, Jeffrey Epstein did exist, so it's based on a true fact. So I'd like to, let's not sweep away all the wrongs of the vaccine, just to kind of concentrate on the good things.
So this
if that
is
makes
the
sense.
Question.
Let's
I'm gonna...
let's know the entire conversation. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, this is the last question for the recording today, and I was very curious, and I think it's particularly valid in a world that is so polarized, and anyone who's not 100%, who does not 100% agree with what you agree on, you label them as the enemy. So for example, I don't like the conspiracy around vaccine to negate the benefit from the vaccine, but I think there was a level of dishonesty. For example, AstraZeneca, you don't hear about it towards the late stage because it was riskier than the others. But
It was pulled away from, like, honestly, they gave it to like a bunch of old people, and then they said, no, we shouldn't give it ever to old people. And it's like, at the end of the day, the thing that bothered me, they tried to make it mandatory. So for the thing that they were lying, you can't make a lie mandatory.
Yeah.
Just tell me the whole truth and then let's make it mandatory. But you can't. But they would also kind of go, no, that doesn't matter. We need everybody
to
buy it.
Just to highlight to listeners, it's not an actual debate on the vaccine, the whole public policy.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, but what I'm saying is in this era, it's either or, and you get labeled very quickly. And however, you are not afraid of, for example, doing a gig at Comedy Unleashed where some comedians say, oh, I don't want to be anywhere close to that because if I do, I get labeled, right?
Yeah.
So how do you survive in this environment?
I feel like that's so important to actually do both gigs and actually show that the audience isn't really that divided. We're just making a spectacle out of it a bit and also radicalizing people in the process of making a spectacle. But I'm like very proud of being able to go to Comedy Unleashed and do the exact same jokes I do at Angel and have the exact same laughs and all of the jokes being political.
Yeah.
Like I'm very proud of, and I think most audience can. Jokes aren't really that complicated to follow. So most audience can't follow the four sentences, sorry, I said F. But they can follow like four sentences to your conclusion, if that makes sense.
Yes, and that's why I have reserved this question in the special after the bit when you joke about I'm a vaxxed anti-vaxxer.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite lines. I'm a vaxxed anti-vaxxer because I also wanted to travel.
Yeah.
And a lot of people actually find themselves in that situation, right?
I was happy when I thought of that joke. So if I can elaborate very quickly, before the pandemic, I had like an idea that I worked on that science and religion are kind of the same.
Mm.
Because you kind of still need to believe in them because I can't check science.
Because you don't have a laboratory in your house.
Yeah. I don't have the skills. For me, it's still like they kind of go, well, you have to trust science. Well, science needs to earn my trust because I can't check it. I know some people can check it, but I can't. So it's still a belief system for me.
Okay.
Anyway, but I had this joke way before the pandemic. And then when the pandemic started, it just kind of fitted in perfectly
that
with
joke
the thing.
Made me laugh. Okay, initially I cringed, but when you explain, because you don't have a laboratory in your own house, how do you measure? I complicate. But at the same time, I felt a bit of unease with that joke. It's just a different philosophy because the populism has been rising in Western country in recent year. And just before the Brexit negotiation, remember when Michael Gove said that this country have had enough of experts. We don't need any more experts. There's a little link from that to the anti-elitism, anti-expert populism. Yeah. I'm not saying that's your responsibility, but there's a very subtle...
But it's not. And also, like, all the conspiracy theories do come from the fact that the government is kind of lying and the Pfizer isn't really the nicest company in the world.
No, they are not.
So they have things to sort out. So we can't ignore that. We need to still talk about it, if that makes
that's
sense.
That's why ultimately, like, last time I say that talking to people who don't fully agree with you is very important.
I think so. Also, you can find an expert in any field. With enough money, you can find an expert in any field to say whatever you want. Because, you know, there's not like one expert and the experts don't all agree with each other. Do you know the guy that... So there was like a big thing in the 1920s of how they said the gasoline was very dangerous because it had lead in it. And they actually got like a scientist to come in and kind of say, no, lead isn't dangerous. And he like drank something on camera and then eventually, you know, like 20 years later died. But basically because of that dude, the entire globe got infested with lead.
In a special, you say the line, well, I don't really know the I'm saying. I'm just talking shit. You guys, you know, you came to a comedy show, right?
Yeah. I think that's very important. For what's the question, by the way?
The question is, was ad-lib or you always intended to include that line in a show after those jokes?
I think I kind of always have it in the... And
why? That's my question.
Because I feel like there needs to be a space where people can talk without... I feel like that's what's important about comedy. It is kind of... And it's historically been a space where you can say anything without fear of consequences. That space needs to exist. So that's why I'm saying it's a comedy show. Don't take it seriously. But come on, let's talk about this and see.
You diffuse the tension and say, it's okay to... talk about it. It doesn't mean your final decision, your final position on this.
Yeah.
But you should allow enough uncertainty to question your current belief.
Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And I feel like comedy is the ultimate place where you can kind of, and where we should be able to do that.
Okay. We may have started with you being Romanian, but we still come back to a very comedy-specific point. And I think it's a perfect point to end on, except...
It is comedy with an accent, so I feel like we covered both words.
Either way, we're just two comedians doing a podcast episode. We cannot save the world. But what we can is to promote Radu on social media for...
Oh, so, please do.
I noticed from the last recording, you actually changed your Instagram handle. You were Radu70MLD, and that account has disappeared. Why?
I just changed the name. I kept getting advice from people that I should make it my name.
Except someone was Radu Isak already, so you have to tell Radu Isak.
I just put Radu Isak too.
To be funny.
Yeah, just to be funny. Yeah.
So you can follow Radu on Radu Isak too.
My website is also RaduIsak2.com.
Yeah. The special Keep It Coughing is on YouTube, and you have a show, Sadly Funny, coming up in March and April.
Yeah, and I'm doing it in London, a top secret, like a big new venue.
Yes.
So it's on the 6th of April. It's a Sunday, like 7 p.m. I did it in February. It was fantastic. Please come down, because I don't know if I have... other 300 people that want to see me.
Yeah. I will include a link in the episode description column. Apart from that, anything else you want to plug?
And I'm doing like the immigrant show. So if you guys like comedy with an accent, it's like the first and last Sunday of the month at the Camden Comedy Club. I try to diversify the lineup as much as I can, but we have like 30 or 40 immigrants that we keep rotating. And we're probably going to expand in like the autumn. I'm not saying anything else, but please come to those shows.
Oh, last time I share it and then... some people did come, like a Taiwanese guy and his husband.
Okay, yeah. That makes me happy.
Cool. Okay. Oh, we've done longer than I thought it would be. That's the end of recording today. If you like, please subscribe, leave us some comment, and follow me and Radu on social media. Otherwise, have a very nice day. I'll see you next time. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye.